you two. The first one was the unique nature of the resurrection. The unique nature of the resurrection. There's only been one person who ever lived who claimed to be God and also claimed that he would die and that he would rise again. Jesus didn't just leave us words. He didn't just do what so many have done and say, well, you just need to believe me. Oh, I've had this vision. You know, the angel Baloney came to, or Moroni, whatever his name is. This angel came and he gave me these golden plates. You know, I saw this, you know, remember Oral Roberts and the 50-foot Jesus he saw? He didn't just give these things that he said he saw, or these things he said he knew, or this experience he said he had. Jesus made himself public. He publicly declared himself to be God. He publicly allowed himself to be crucified. He publicly allowed himself to die in front of them where people could see it. They watched him be buried. He made himself a public spectacle after his resurrection. So he made it about himself, and he's the only one who's ever done that. Now, I was very encouraged in my days of trying to look into this by not so much by what Christians say, but by what the unbelievers of the time said. And it's encouraging to me that we looked at some secular sources that believe that the resurrection actually did happen. And so those are some outside sources. Now, second thing then that we talked about was last week. The second thing that is one of the second reasons that I am convinced that Jesus was who he said he was is because of the survival and the miraculous growth of the church. Now, when I say that, the church should not be here. Now, the church is messed up, okay? Let's not kid ourselves. The church is messed up. You know, when you've got all these different kinds of churches there and all these different things saying different things, but the fact that Christianity itself, that followers of Jesus Christ continued for 300 years with no Bible, they didn't have a Bible, they continued for 300 years being persecuted, being killed only because they were Christians, fed to lions, drowned, all these things. When you became a Christian, and especially if you got publicly baptized, you put a big bullseye on yourself and you were fodder for whatever leader was in there at the time to do terrible things to you. Nobody would do that unless they were convinced. Absolutely convinced. Now, how is that different from us? Well, they were the first generation after Jesus died. They were the ones who saw. Or they were the ones who talked to the ones who saw. Or they were the ones who talked to the ones who talked to the ones who saw. And the further you go back, the more reliable those eyewitness testimonies are. So the fact that for 300 years, Christianity not only survived, but it flourished. And I always go back, and this is probably going to be my text on Easter morning. I'm going to go back to that story about the man Gamaliel in the book of Acts, who was the most prominent religious leader of the time. He was kind of the most respected leader, philosopher in Jerusalem at the time. And if you know the story, he got up and he made an amazing prophecy. He said, listen, guys, don't worry about these disciples. Don't worry about Peter. Don't worry about John. Don't worry about James. Don't worry about these guys. Yeah, I know. Everybody's listening to them right now. They're making a big uproar in town. Everybody's looking at them. Everybody's talking to them. He said, but remember this. There have been a whole bunch of people who have come along and said they were God, that they were the Messiah, that they were the lead, this and that. When they died, what happened to their followers? Their following, it died also. He said, if Jesus was who he said he was, you can't fight this. If Jesus really was God, you can't fight this. If he wasn't God, then this following is going to die out very, 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 very quickly. I thought that was an amazing prophecy because now, 2,000 years later, we see not only has Christianity not died out, but there are people like us who are almost as convinced that it's true as the people were who actually watched it happen. So that's the second reason was the church. Now, there are some who would say, no, wait a minute, Pastor, hold on. But isn't that the same as Islam? Islam didn't die out when Muhammad died, right? Confucianism didn't die out when Confucius died. So how is Christianity different? I'll tell you how Christianity is different. Muhammad never claimed to be God. Muhammad never claimed to make it about himself. He made it about his ideas. Jesus made it about himself. He said, I'm going to die and I'm going to resurrect. Muhammad never said that. So Christianity is unique in that Jesus put it all upon himself and he put it all upon his resurrection. And he said, if I don't resurrect, don't believe me. That's basically what he said. He said, hey, prove it. He said, I'll prove it to you. I will prove to you that I am who I say that I am. So in that way, you know, he's unique. Now, are these proof? Of course not. And we've already established absolute proof does not exist, right? Doesn't exist. Can't prove it. There's no way to prove it. However, what we're looking for is we're looking for evidence. Evidence from here, such as the resurrection, and do secular believers believe in the resurrection, or secular non-believers believe in that? We're looking at, you know, the church, and we're taking this, we're taking the Bible into account, we're taking this eyewitness and that, this writing somebody did. We gather all the evidence together. We're looking for what's the big word, starts with the letter P, the preponderance of evidence. You see, in a court of law, for a jury to make a decision, they don't just listen to one eyewitness, right? You know, unless, of course, you're trying to become a Supreme Court judge. You don't just listen to one witness. You listen to multiple witnesses, right? And then you combine that with some DNA evidence, and they combine that with some, you know, some forensic work and this and that. And so you gather all the evidence together. And when you gather all the evidence together, you say, you ask the question, which is the most likely to be true, right? So that's where I'm coming from. And so tonight, that leads me then to my third and final point that I want to make to you of why I am convinced. And this is probably the one that is probably least important, but I got to be honest with you, when I went through a 3-year period of time where I almost stopped believing in God, this is the one that brought me back. This right here, what I'm going to tell you tonight, is what brought me back to becoming a believer. It wasn't the church. It wasn't even the resurrection, because I really didn't even get the importance of that at the time. But this is what it is. Number three, I came to the realization that God is the most likely supernatural force. Supernatural force that was required to bring the universe into existence. I came to the realization, I'm a science guy. I enjoy science. I enjoy astronomy. I enjoy biology. I enjoy all these things. I enjoy, you know, physics very, very much. And I find an amazing order in physics. I find it remarkable. There's both, you know, on a subatomic level, there's very, very spooky things that happen you can't explain inside of an atom. Very spooky things. And you contrast that then with on the macro scale, on the larger scale, that everything operates exactly as it should across the whole universe. And I find there's an order there that is beautiful in a lot of ways. But the thing is that, you know, as we get into this tonight, you know, there had to be a supernatural force that brought our universe into existence. Now, I need you to just sort of, I know you're filling out your paper and all that, but try to stay with me as we just talk here for a little bit first. When I say a supernatural force, what do I mean? Our universe shouldn't be here. Our universe, when I say our universe, if we could somehow transport ourselves to the very farthest edges of our universe, I really don't know what we would see there, because theoretically, there shouldn't be anything beyond our universe, is what we believe, right? You with me? And at some point, the stars stop, or the galaxies stop, and at some point, everything stops. We can't get our heads around that. But within the framework of our universe, to the best as we understand it, there are laws that govern everything here. And those laws work all the time. Can anybody give me one of the... There are actually 4 fundamental forces in our universe. This is for fun. Does anybody know what they are? Gravity's one. Gravity works every time. Every time. Yeah. As Roy so beautifully demonstrated for us here about 6 weeks ago. You step off of a ladder, you're going down. You never fall up a ladder. You never fall up. I mean, think about it. You just don't. You always fall down. Gravity always works. Electromagnetic force is the next one. It's basically what light is. It works the same all the time. The speed of light is always the same. You know, it's strong nuclear force and weak nuclear force. You don't need to worry about what all those are. My point is, at some point when our universe came into existence, it came with this set of laws that are never broken. They cannot be broken. They're always that way. Now watch, and here's the tricky part. You got to get this or the rest of the night will be a waste for you. But the fact that the universe is here means that something outside of the universe had to make it, because one of the fundamental principles or laws of our universe is that you can't make a universe. You can't make anything. So that's kind of where we're going tonight with this. See, so the granddaddy of all these laws, I got to hurry here, I'm going to get behind and we'll never catch up. The granddaddy of all the laws of our universe, I mean, the number one that governs everything else. This is going to be a science lesson here at the beginning, so just hang on. There's a lot of scripture at the end, probably won't look at it all. But the big supreme law of the universe is this one. It's called the first law of thermodynamics. The first law of thermodynamics. Now, please don't think, oh, I'm going to get bored here. This is science. I did all this in high school. I said I'd never want to go back to that. I totally get that. But I am much better looking than your high school science teacher. I am much better looking than Xavier's high school science teacher. He's not in high school yet. Now look. So the first law of thermodynamics, what does it say? Well, to just put it in everyday language, it basically says this. You can't create matter or energy out of nothing. You just can't. It can't happen. It just doesn't work. Energy and matter can change forms. It can be, energy can become matter. Matter can become energy. They can change forms, but you can't create them and you can't destroy them. You could take a, I could light a match in here, and you would watch that match burn down into ash. And we would look at that and say, well, see, it's gone. Well, it's not gone. The matter of that wood and the chemicals that were on that match, those just changed form. They became energy. They became light and heat. They changed form, but they didn't disappear. Even the conservationists know this. This is what our world is engripped in, this whole question of, are we messing up our atmosphere? Because you take a piece of coal and you burn it and we think it's gone. Well, it's not gone. Some of the matter remains in the form of ash, but most of it went up into the atmosphere in the form of something else. So energy and matter cannot be created. There is no such thing as just poof science. Okay? It's poof science. That means you can't just make something appear out of nothing. That is the granddaddy, huh? That's all, but that's because Joe's father is the devil. I said in this world. In this world. That's what he gets for stealing that pie at that funeral. Enough said. So look, you can't, poof, there's no such thing as that. You can't just make something out of nothing. That is the first and foremost principle that this universe operates under. What does that mean? What's the significance of that? What that means is it couldn't create itself, and nothing from within it could create it. So something outside of our universe had to create it. Now, the thing about that is, you know, when we look at that, it's that's why I call it supernatural. Because right now, our world is messed up in our thinking. Our world is, we've allowed this thinking that there's a, okay, if you want to talk about the origin of the universe, you go out here and you interview people and you say, hey, how'd the universe start? People are going to line up in two basic columns. There are going to be those who believe there was a creator. That's where we would kind of be, there was created by a creator, a god kind of thing. Then there are those who would say it was natural. It was a natural process. It just naturally developed by nature. I don't know how to say that. Look, here's the problem with that. The laws of nature don't allow for that. See, that whole contrast there is flawed on its face, because both of those, regardless of what happened, regardless of what the theory you want to believe is, you must believe and understand that something outside, a force outside of nature, had to be what created it. Now, we call it God, okay? Call it whatever you want. Look, you can call it, you know, the spaghetti factory if you want to. I don't care. Call it whatever you want. But something outside of the universe had to do it. So the question we really get to is, so what was it? What was the force outside of the universe that created the universe? This is where we, and again, if you're, please don't get lost in this and don't think, oh man, you know, this is too sciencey, this is a big issue. Look, I promise you, this one point, if you'll just please hang in here with me, this is what will resonate most with most intellectuals today. Because they have to agree that something supernatural, by what I mean by that is something outside of nature. So, all right, so let's get into that. So we have some cosmological theories. Now, please understand, cosmology is not the same as cosmetology. Okay? Two totally different things. In the same way that astronomy and astrology are two totally different things. Don't confuse those things. Cosmology is simply the study of the cosmos, study of the universe. How did it happen? How did it work? How did it start? How does it work? What's taking place within it? And so forth. So there are really, for all of time, there have really just been two categories of theories. The first one is a typo on your paper, by the way. It should say steady state, S-T-E-A-D-Y, steady state. The steady state theory simply is what was believed for, honestly, millennia. We look up in the sky, and doesn't it look like the stars are just sort of stuck in a plasma or something? And that's what the earliest man looked up, and they just saw these stars, and it just looked like they were stuck there. That's all they knew. But it also continues. Steady state just simply means that basically the universe doesn't change. The stars don't change in terms of they're not moving. Now, that's enough for that. The second thing then is that the universe is expanding. In other words, what we see when we look up in the sky isn't really all there is. It's actually expanding and moving away from each other. That was the prevailing theory for millennia, would have been the first one. That was the only thing even considered, because after all, when we look up in the sky and we see these stars, they don't really seem like they're moving, do they? Now, there was a time when they did notice, and astronomers noticed, that they would transverse the sky. So the logical assumption was that the Earth is sitting still and the whole universe is revolving around it. Right? And that's logical. That's what any rational person would have thought prior to being able to really study that in more detail in telescopes and so forth. But even that went by the wayside as well. Because in the early 20th century, the big issue in the field of astronomy was these two things. All astronomers were lining up. Some were steady state theory people, thinking that the universe is static, it just stays the way it is. But there were some who were following a French astronomer's lead in the late 1800s. He thought the universe was actually getting bigger, but he couldn't prove it. So this was the raging debate in the early 20th century. And it wasn't until 1929 when a guy came along named Edwin Hubble. You know the Hubble Space Telescope, named after him. He made two monumental, probably the two most amazing, at the time at least, and Einstein had some pretty good stuff too, but this really was the most practical and most amazing discoveries that he made. The first one was that what he was looking at through a telescope weren't just stars, that beyond the stars in our soul, in our particular galaxy that we live in, there are other galaxies that swirling. They were fuzzy. He thought they were fuzzy stars. It turns out there were billions and billions of stars in galaxies. Prior to him discovering that, nobody knew that. Everybody just thought, well, we see some stars, and that's all we have. But the second thing was really the big thing, and that was he discovered that those galaxies are all racing away from each other. The universe was expanding. He settled that debate. Now, I say that to much of you saying, ho-hum, big deal. Does anybody know why that was such a big deal? Okay, let me tell you. Well, here's the thing. So Hubble proved that the galaxies were racing away from each other. If they're racing away from each other, that means at some point, if you could rewind the clock, they all had to come back and converge into a single point. And that was the theory that then that came out of that. So they realized that means, and that had a bigger implication. That implication meant the universe had a beginning. It wasn't just always here. Now, when so Hubble came up with this theory, and he talked about how the galaxies are racing away from each other. If you could bring them all back into this single point, he believed that, and many others did as well, that they all would have, at the beginning, they would have all been condensed into a tiny little something called they called a singularity, a little dot. Doesn't really matter how big it was. But the point is, that had to come from somewhere too. Because no matter how small it was, it still had to come into being. So if you could rewind the clock, there had to be a beginning. Now, this angered one particular astronomer at the time who happened to be a devout atheist. And his name was Fred Hoyle. Fred Hoyle. Fred Hoyle hated the idea of the galaxies racing away from each other, and that meant that you could rewind the clock and at some point they were all together, because he understood the implications of that. He said, if they all come back together, that means there had to be a beginning. And if there was a beginning, that means something outside of our universe had to create it. And so he coined a term that he was actually making fun of Edwin Hubble. He was making fun of his discovery and his theory that it was all come back to one point and then it exploded. Does anybody know what that phrase was that he called it? He called it the Big Bang. He was actually making fun of Edwin Hubble. Well, that term caught on. And for some stupid reason, Christians became opposed to that, and I still don't know why. Because all it was a theory that at some point all the galaxies came back, all the matter in the universe, all the energy came back to a single point and came into being. And something outside of our universe had to be responsible for that. Now, that's where we're at today. 90 years later, that is still the prevailing theory. Now, there's some other things. There's a lot of tweaking of it, string theory and all the different kinds of things. But basically, the scientific community has accepted the fact that something outside of the bounds of our universe created it. And there are lots of theories for that. May I please give you one? Now, we find it in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1. Here's a theory. Hey, listen, it's just a theory. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, you could say whatever this unknown force was outside the universe, the created universe, call it whatever you want. You know, Fred Hoyle probably would have liked to have called it Fred. And he could have said, my theory is, in the beginning, Fred created the heavens. In the beginning, Xavier, Damien created the universe. You can call it whatever you want. Or you could come up with a big, long scientific name for it. You could even come up with a whole dogma of thoughts about it. You could come up with a mathematical equation if you want to. But they're all theories. Listen, folks, they're all theories. This is just a theory. It's really quiet. See, when I say that, there are some of you who say, well, what do you mean it's just a theory? It's just a theory, folks. It's just a theory. I can't prove it. See, it's not a law because it hasn't been proven. I can prove gravity. I can prove gravity. Doug, jump out the window, would you? Come on, Doug, take one for the team. Look, I can prove gravity. We can prove electromagnetism. They're laws. You can't prove this. It's a theory. There are many theories. But this is a good one. It's just as good as anything else out there. All right, so what else is out there? Well, there are some that believe, for example, let's talk, okay, actually, so what does it mean? Does this satisfy, let's ask ourselves this, scientifically speaking, does this satisfy, as a theory, the two requirements for the universe being here? Well, actually, it does. It has a beginning, and it has a force outside of the universe that is acting as the creator, right? It can be a who, or it could be a what, but there is a force outside the universe that had to bring it into being. This satisfies both of them. It's a valid theory. You with me so far? Okay, so let's go on. So what are some other theories? Well, one of the big theories now is something called a multiverse theory. Multiverse simply means there are other universes out there, and one of those universes burped. This is how astronomers talk. Some of them use an even more vulgar expression, but it burped, created this universe. Okay? It was just an anomaly, and something happened, and you know, and a piece of it shot out and started a whole new universe. Wait. That's a theory. It's not necessarily flawed, except for one thing. How did something outside the universe, did it not have its own laws of nature? So we'd have to assume that universe had a different set of laws. Okay, time out. What would you call heaven? Couldn't heaven be looked at as another universe with its own set of laws? I mean, things work differently in heaven. Gravity, you've seen the angels floating on clouds, right? We know that there's no gravity in heaven, right? See, things are different there. So it's not necessarily this crazy thing. We're a lot of times we're just not thinking about things the right way. We've alienated a part of our world that says, well, I just don't want to believe in God. That's okay. You want to believe in multiverse? That's fine. I got no problem with that. Name it whatever you want. I'll name it heaven. I'll just name it heaven. It's fine. You see, you have this multiverse. Now, what is the deal with multiverse? What that means is there's a force that is not limited by our physical laws that created our physical laws. That's all that means. And that's multiverse. You know, there are other theories that there is a universe out there that didn't have time. See, we don't have to worry about that issue of time. We don't have to worry about the whole thing of going back, reversing the clock, because there is a universe out there that didn't have this concept of time involved. You know, there's no such thing as time. Time is one of the dimensions we have to live with. We live in four dimensions, folks. We live in three spatial dimensions and one time dimension, and we're bound by that. Have any of you figured out how to not be bound by time? Anybody? Have you figured out how not to get older? Have you figured out how to slow time down or speed time up? Nope. It is what it is, right? We're bound by that. So that kind of a universe maybe didn't have that. And then there's some that believe that our universe doesn't even actually exist, that we are all just thoughts of some entity that we cannot know. Now look, folks, that's a theory. You know, you can't prove that you're here right now. Well, think about it. You could be in a hospital bed in Rochester, New York, in a coma, dreaming this. It's possible, right? It's a theory. The point I'm trying to make tonight is this is just as good a theory. In fact, I think it's a better theory because it's much simpler and it checks all the boxes. How does it do that? So as I look at these, I could think, okay, so of all these theories we're talking about, actually, one could be right, one could be correct, and all the rest of them wrong. Or none of them could be correct, and we don't even know anything yet. They could all be wrong. Or could they all be true? Could they actually all be correct? Well, is it possible that this could be right, that God could have created the heaven and the earth? Is it also possible that God is a force that's not limited by our physical laws, like the first one? Is it also possible that the same God is a force that is not limited by the constraints of time? Is it also possible that this same God is also, you know, that we're all just a part of the Creator? Is there any possibility that we're all just a part of him? That we're a part of his heart, his thoughts, his spirit? Well, let's take a look at some scripture. How about the first one? A force not limited by our physical laws. We've already established Genesis 1:1. How about John 1:3? All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. All right, so scripture tells us that God made everything. He violates the physical laws of our universe, right? If it's true, he can violate the physical laws of our universe. Let's skip to Colossians 1:16. Look at this one. For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. Why is Paul talking about things that are invisible? Whether they be thrones or dominions, that means forces, by the way, principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. So he is outside the bounds of that. How about the second one? We got to cut the time here. A force without time. Is he a force that doesn't operate according to the time? Well, look at John chapter 8 and verse 58. Skip ahead. Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Before Abraham was, I am? Doesn't that sound like somebody who's saying, I don't operate with time. See, I don't do time. I'm outside that. And God's not bragging because he can do it. And he called himself, I am, when he talked to Moses. Okay, how about lastly, number